and Hanai. Hey, everybody. How are you feeling this week, guys? I know you just came back from a weekend. I hope you got rest. I hope you had good sleep. And I'm so glad that you decided to tune into my podcast because you obviously know that I'm going to be talking about how to make yourself better, how to make yourself more evolved, and how to make yourself feel so much more excited about who you are. First off, I want to give props to my brother who decided to sit through another podcast with me, Dennis. Thank you for joining me again.
Hey, what's up, guys?
If you guys have heard past podcasts, the reason why I even learned about podcasts is because of Dennis. You put me on with podcasts and got me so much more woke to learning through podcasts other than the books that I already read.
It's the best.
How did you get into it, by the way?
NPR. Started listening to NPR and I was trying to figure out how to get more of it, and then I fell into podcasts.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know what? I asked a question a couple weeks ago to you listeners out there about whether or not you listened to podcasts before me. And I got an astounding answer that 46% of my 1.8 million followers, which, you know, is, I don't even know how to fucking compute that. But 46% of you had never listened to podcasts before Listen Hanai. So Dennis, the same 1-2 tutorial that you gave to me as to why I should start podcasting, what would you say to my listeners out there who only listen to Listen Hanai? Why should they sign on to more podcasts?
I think it's the best way to get information. I don't think you should stop reading because there's a different way of learning. we got a memory expert on here. And then, but it's you're killing two birds with one stone. Like, usually people work with their hands. They can't, you know, you can always listen. You know, you don't always want to listen to Kendrick Lamar and stuff, you know?
Right, right.
But yeah, you just balance yourself that way. And it's a good way to digest, man.
Right. For those of you who signed on, thank you for listening to Listen Hanai. Thank you for subscribing. And I'm really excited about my guest today. So my guest today has been a friend of mine for about 4 years. And I met him because of a mutual friend, but then I grew attracted to him and his work because of his expertise. So welcome to the room, Mr. Jim Quick. Hi, Jim.
I'm so glad to be here. And this is, thank you everyone who's listening to this.
Now, Jim, you also have a podcast and that's why your baritone is coming in thickness
right
now.
I'm all down for podcasts.
You have such a good podcast voice. How many people tell you that?
Is it better than video?
I mean, you have that sexy, there is a podcast voice. There is. It's like a, I don't know what it is, but yours sounds so sexy. I mean, like,
appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a great thing. So I'm glad you stepped into the podcast world. Your podcast is dripping with knowledge, though. So just for a few of you guys to understand what Jim's talent is, let me explain two definitions that I love are out there about you. And I want you to tell us about yourself. When it comes to Forbes, they've described you, Jim, as Jim Quick's superpower is learning. The ability to learn quickly is a distinct and powerful competitive advantage in business. It enables all success in a fast-paced, fast-changing world, which I love. Now, if you go to Jim, though, on his Instagram, Jim has the most basic bio, which is your brain fitness and memory coach. So my friends describe you as a memory expert. I feel like you're one of my superhero friends. And it's all because of your disgustingly crazy talent to remember things. So can you explain to us, how would you break down your skill?
Well, I think everybody has had the experience where they're losing their memory a little bit. Yeah. Like senior moments are coming too early. Yeah. They feel absent-minded.
Right.
Maybe they're in the shower. They can't remember if they shampooed their hair and they end up doing it maybe twice.
You have your phone in your hand and you don't even realize it's sitting
exactly,
there.
Exactly. Where their glasses are. Maybe it's not sitting on top of your head.
Yep.
Or they walk into a room and forget why they're there. Or they go to the store to buy one thing. And they come back with two bags full of things, except for that one thing that they went to.
Damn you, Target and IKEA. Yeah,
or they're studying, they're preparing for their work, and they're reading a page in a book, and they forgot what they just read, and they go back and they reread it, and they forgot what they just read again. They misplace things: their wallet, their purse, their cell phone, their car keys, or if not their car keys, something larger like their car. You see the people using their car alarms like GPS trying to figure out where they parked the car, and they realize they took Lyft or Uber that day.
Right.
That kind of thing. Yeah, I believe two of the most costly words in our life are I forgot. I forgot to do it. I forgot to bring it. I forgot what I was going to say. I forgot that conversation. I forgot that meeting. I forgot that person's name. It just goes on and on and on. And the good news is there's hope. That these things, it's challenging with technology now, right? We have digital overload, too much to learn, too little time. There's digital distraction. right? We can't focus on things anymore. Like, say we have less of a concentration than a goldfish nowadays. And there's a big thing called digital dementia, where we're so dependent on our smart devices to keep our calendars, to our to-dos.
Did you make up that word?
No, this is a new term in healthcare. It's called digital dementia. It's the high reliance on technology. And your brain is like a muscle, and it's use it or lose it. But if you're relying on your phone to tell you when and where to turn, do simple math for you, your brain's not getting the exercise any more than if you're taking the escalator and the elevator all the time, you know, how that affects our physical muscles. So I'm really passionate about helping people to upgrade their brain, because people upgrade their phones more than they do their mind.
Yo.
Yeah.
You just schooled us right there. Hence you defining yourself as a brain fitness and memorization coach. So what I love about you, if you meet Jim, I just got to break this up because I've never told Jim this in person, but when you meet my friend Jim, he's really serious. He walked into a room and you have this studious look about you where you seem like you're assessing all of the sensories around you, but you're really inside your head and you don't release your energy to just anybody. Does that make sense, guys? So what I'm trying to explain to you is he looks mad serious, but when you talk to him, there's a warmth underneath the things that he knows. So when I first met Jim, I was intimidated because I was like, you get an aura when somebody walks into you. It feels like you're in your head and you know some shit that I don't know. So you could use it at any time type feel. So I'm sitting there like bubbly genie, all like, hi, Jim. My name's Genie and I know lots of things about fashion and I think about dick sometimes and I have questions about sex and I have, you know, relational issues. So that's what I'm thinking in my head. And Jim's just like this calm, steady, even energy of love. It's a weird, different form of love, because love can, you assume love to be warm and fuzzy and like gushy, but your information and your skill really comes out in a form of love that's very dependable and safe feeling. So if you Google Jim, you'll see oodles of YouTubes and speaking engagements and thousands of people in an auditorium where he's teaching people how to memorize most basic things like numbers, or schooling them on how to, again, work your brain out so that you don't lose it. But at the end of the day, you really want people to like themselves more and to have stronger relationships through your memory. How does that correlate?
We always talked about the brain and be able to remember things, but I also think our heart is, you store information there too. You know what I mean? The way you feel about certain things. I think one of the keys to a long-term memory is information by itself is very forgettable, but information tied to emotion becomes a long-term memory. Like you've heard, how many of people listening could hear a song and could take you back to when you're a teenager?
Totally.
Or a fragrance or a food.
Tevin Campbell, I'm ready. Well, send me back.
Exactly.
In your tears.
Exactly. So when you tie emotion to something, it becomes unforgettable. And I'm wearing this shirt that says, follow your heart, but bring your brain. But I always talk about heart a lot because I feel like Maya Angelou has this great saying that says, people will forget what you said, they'll forget what you did, but they'll always remember how you made them feel. Yeah. And so it always comes back to that. I think having a great, when people listen to my podcast, they'll learn in 15 minutes how to memorize quickly facts, figures, foreign languages, formulas, all those great things. So I think mental intelligence is very important nowadays, because we're paid, everyone who's listening, you're not paid for your muscle power, you're paid for your mind power. It's not your brute strength, it's your brain strength also as well. But also, it's not just mental intelligence. What I really want people to fall in love with is their own mental fitness and mental health, because those are equally important, how you feel about yourself. You were talking about self-love, because self-love and self-care is not selfish. And I think that it's so important for us to fall back in love with the person in the mirror who has been through so much, but is still standing. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where no amount of love from the external world is gonna be able to give your soul what it needs from you. And I think we should love ourselves so much that we teach other people how to love us, show them how it's done.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because I'm excited my friend Jim is in the room, I wanna show off how his talent works in different ways when it comes to, first, Jim, if you could share what you do with celebrities and how you've helped them with your knowledge. And then now your podcast and your own relationships in life. Like, how do you teach your brain to be more loving? And how does our memory have to do with that?
So here in Hollywood, I help actors to be able to do things that make them just better. And that's why I love your show. It's about making people, you know, fall in love with themselves and also make improvements in these other areas of their life that are important. And so for actors, I'll help them do something like speed read scripts. I'll help them to memorize their lines.
Can you just name drop a couple? I mean, just go ahead, drop them. I'll pick them up for you. Yeah. Give us a couple actors you've worked
with. Well,
people
could just, you know, scroll through social media. But I get to work with, you know, everyone from an Elon Musk to a Will Smith.
Wow.
To the cast of the X-Men. Help them to, as I talked about, memorize their scripts better, be able to be focused on set, on camera when they need to perform. But I think these are skills that everybody could benefit from. I mean, who can't benefit from being able to remember things better, to be able to be focused, to be able to have concentration, to be able to have brain energy instead of that brain fog?
Absolutely. Now, when it comes to the everyday person that's not living in a Hollywood life, where are we falling short of memory? Why does it feel like everything that you just mentioned is happening to us? Is it because we're getting older? Is it because of the digital world? Why are we forgetting more?
Yeah. So I would say that if you're suffering for any of this, there's no such thing as a good or bad memory. There's a trained memory and there's an untrained memory. When people see me on social media or on stages do these demonstrations, like I was in front of over 30,000 people over the past 30 days. I'll have a group of people, I'll have 100 people stand up in an audience and introduce themselves, and I'll memorize all their names in real time. Or they'll give me 100 numbers or 100 words, and I'll memorize them forwards and backwards. But I always tell people, I don't do this to impress you. I do this to express to you what's really possible, because the truth is, every single person listening to this could do that and a lot
Jim,
more.
Jim, stop.
I'm telling you.
Where's the lie? It's sitting right in front of me. Jim, that's not possible. No, you have a better brain in the memory department than we do. There's no way I could train my brain to get like yours.
I can see your frontal
lobe.
Stop. You guys are so funny.
What do you mean by that?
This is what I know. It's because we have students in 195 countries online, and some of them are far advanced than what I could do. It's people are really surprised to learn that I actually grew up with severe learning challenges. When I was 5 years old, I had a very bad accident in kindergarten class, head trauma, brain injury, and my mom. I was rushed to the hospital. My mom said from that point, I was very energetic and I was very curious, but I shut down and I had trouble learning. Teachers would repeat themselves 4 or 5 times, and I would pretend to understand, but I really didn't understand anything.
Oh wow!
I had poor focus, very bad recall. It took me an extra 3, almost 4 years longer to learn how to read, and which is really stressful, right? Remember, back in school, you would get in those reading circles and they would pass around that book.
And you would get that. You just had that one line to say.
Exactly.
You had that one sentence.
And then you had to read out loud. And I think that's, and you get nervous when that book comes closer and closer. And I think actually that's where the fear of public speaking comes from a lot of people. You know how a lot of people say public speaking is like the most scared thing that they are.
Yeah,
they say it's number one. Number two is fire. And the third fear is death. Death is number 3.
Death goes there.
So if
someone in trouble, you're supposed to say public speaking.
Exactly. Exactly. This is like the person that if you're at a funeral, most people would actually rather, you know, be in the box than to be the one that's giving the eulogy, because they're so scared of public speaking.
Wow.
And so I think a lot of it came from that insecurity when you're a kid reading that book. And when that book came to me, I would just stare at it and it meant nothing. I couldn't understand any of these words. So I would just pass it on.
And this was because of the injury.
My brain injury, yeah.
Okay.
When I was 9 years old, actually, the teacher, I remember, was so frustrated that I couldn't understand something. She pointed to me in front of the whole class and said, "That's the boy with the broken brain." That was my label. Talk about self-talk.
Shit.
Yeah, that label, we have to be very careful with labels, because that label became my limit. And adults have to be very careful, because your external words become a child's internal words. So every single time I did badly on a test, which was all the time, every time I wasn't picked for sports, I would always say to myself, "Oh, it's because I have the broken brain.
You start to use it as the qualifying factor as to why things aren't working out for you. It just becomes the reason for it.
Yeah, and I think we all do that. We all have a sense of learned helplessness in some area of our life. And people come to me all the time. They say, "Jim, I have a horrible memory. Jim, I'm getting too old. Jim, I'm not smart enough." And I would say, stop. If you fight for your limitations, you get to keep them. right? If you fight for, people do it all the time though, right?
You're always
saying all the things.
Especially
that
in LA when we work off labels, right. Sadly. This is a city where you have 1 second to make your aura known, make it known who you are. And so it's either you're the guy who makes money or doesn't make money. You're aspiring, you're figuring yourself out.
Right.
And you're single or you're not single. It's labels.
People love putting people in categories. And I think we do it of ourselves also. And we have to be very careful because we lessen ourselves all the time because we're scared of what other people will think, right? And, you know, we're scared of the other people's opinions. And we could go broke buying into the opinions of other people. Like, if
Absolutely.
We're fueling our life based on the expectations and opinions of others, we're gonna eventually run out of gas.
So you're explaining to me two different things now when it comes to your memory. Not only with this conundrum that you had growing up, do you have to bring your brain not just back to an average place that you should be able to function, but also more extraordinarily better than you imagine because you want to overcome your limitations. But you also have to shake yourself free of this trauma that you're having. You're getting traumatized by being labeled as the boy with the broken brain. You're getting traumatized by not being able to read that book when it gets passed to you.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you start? And who do you talk to about this at that young age? What did you do?
So I struggled. I'm the oldest of three, and I really wanted to make my parents proud. And I had all this responsibility because I wanted to, prove to the world, prove to myself I was worth something. And I just couldn't do it for the longest time until I was about 18. And I was lucky to get into university, and I wanted to make a fresh start. And I thought I would do better. I did worse. And I was ready to quit school.
Why do you think you did worse?
Yeah. I think college is even more difficult than high school because you're spending a lot less time with teachers and more time by yourself. And school assumes you know how to do this. Like, parents will look at a child and say, focus, or study. But that's like going to a child and say, play the piano, who's never taken a piano lesson before. But we're not taught these things. Like, school teaches us what to learn, math, history, science, Spanish. But there are zero classes on how to learn. And I think that's what's most important now is teaching us. I think there's one skill to master in the 21st century. It's our ability to learn how to learn because the world's changing so fast.
Totally.
Okay,
so now you're in college. Mm-hmm. You're struggling with how to learn. You need to figure out how to get your brain in its best shape, but you also need to shake off the memories of these traumatic experiences. Where do you start first? And are they the same way of training your brain?
Yeah, great question. So I was ready to quit. And my friend was like, hey, why don't you get some perspective before you tell your parents that you're going to quit school and break their heart? Why don't you come with me this weekend to visit my family and get a different point of view?
Good friend.
And so I think perspective is important for us. When we are stuck in a problem, changing the people we spend time with or the place we're in helps us give us a fresh point of view. And so I visit them, and family's pretty well off, and the father walks me around his property before dinner and asks me a very innocent question, which is the worst question you could ask me: how's school? And you're right, like, I'm pretty emotionally reserved, but I have so much pent up, I just start bawling in front of this complete stranger.
Wow.
And tell him my whole story about broken brain, I'm not smart enough, I'm ready to quit school, don't know how to tell my parents. And he's like, stop. He's like, why are you in school? What do you want to be? What do you want to do? What do you want to have? What do you want to share? And nobody's ever asked me those questions before. Mm. People automatically say go to school because it's assumed, but we don't know why, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't have an answer, but when I go to answer him, he goes like this, stop again. He pulls out of his back pocket like a journal, and he tears out a couple of sheets and makes me write it down. And I don't know how many people keep like a bucket list or a goals list, but writing things down is so important. It's the first step in making your dreams more physical, right? By taking them out in your mind and putting them on paper. And I write this bucket list, and I fold the sheets to put in my pocket, and he grabs them right out of my hand. And I'm freaking out because no one's ever seen like my dreams before.
Right.
I've never shared these things with anybody. And he starts reading them, and I'm freaking out because I don't want to be judged. And I think that's another thing that we always we're always scared that we're not enough. I think that's the biggest fear we have, is not being enough, because if we're not enough, we're not going to be loved. And if a baby's not loved, they're not going to be cared for, and then we could die maybe.
Absolutely. And it stunts our direction of where we're headed.
Completely. And we don't take risks because we don't want to, and think about a baby. A baby could fall how many times learning how to walk? hundreds and hundreds of times. It never does it, like, never falls 12 times and says, okay, walking's not for me, right?
Right.
It walks. All alcohol, everyone walks. But adults, we try something once or twice, you know, and we just, like, we shrink, right? And so here he's looking at all my dreams and he looks up to me and he's like, Jim, you are this close to everything on that list. I'm spreading my index fingers about a foot apart.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, there's no way. Give me 10 lifetimes. I'm not going to crack that list. And he takes his fingers and he puts them to the side of my head. Meaning what's in between is, like, you know, that brain is like the key. And he takes me into a room of his home I've never seen before. It is wall to wall, ceiling to floor, covered in books. Now, keep in mind, I've never read a book cover to cover. I'm like scared of books,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
it's like being
worst nightmare right now.
It's like being in a, I've never seen a library in someone's house, but it's like being in a room full of snakes. But what makes it worse is he starts grabbing snakes off the shelf and handing them to me. And I'm freaking out, but I'm looking at these titles and there are these biographies of some incredible men and women in history and some very early personal growth books. And he said, Jim, I want you to read one book a week. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Have you not listened to everything? I'm like telling him all the reasons why.
I'm the guy with the broken brain. What are you talking
about?
And
if you fight for your limitations, again, you get to keep them. But so many people do. They fight for what they can't do. And he's like, I was telling him about all the schoolwork I have. I can't do it because I have midterms. And he looks at me. He's like, Jim, don't let school get in the way of your education. That's an old Mark Twain quote, but I didn't realize it at the time. And I was like, that's very insightful. That's very insightful, but I still can't promise. Because if I promise I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And he's like, very smart man. He reaches into his pocket and he pulls out my bucket list, which he still has. And he has the audacity. He starts reading every single one of my dreams out loud.
In front of you. Oh my God, yeah. Terror.
I mean,
sweat.
Can you imagine, like, being an 18-year-old insecure kid that doesn't feel like he's enough, and all of a sudden you hear your dreams and another person's voice, and it's like incanted out in the universe. And it messed with my mind something fierce, because a lot of the things on that list were things I wanted to do for my parents, things they can never afford. They can never afford, or even if they could, they wouldn't even do it for themselves.
Right.
And with that motivation, and I think it's important going back to, I believe there's a success formula for all of us. It's three H's: head, heart, hands. That you could affirm or set a goal in your head, but if you're not acting with your hands, you're procrastinating, you're self-sabotaging, you're putting it off, then I would invite everybody to check in with the second H, which is your heart, which is why, which is the emotions. Like, why do you, because if you don't have reasons, you're not gonna get the rewards,
right,
and the results. And those are my reasons. It was helping my family because they sacrificed so much coming to this country. And so with that motivation, I say, I agree, I'll do it. And now I'm sitting back at school, I'm sitting at my desk, pile of books I have to read for school, pile of books I promised to read, and I couldn't even get through pile A. So what do? I don't eat, I don't sleep, I don't work out, I don't spend time with friends, I just live in the library, and I'm wasting away. And I end up passing out one night in the library, I fall down a flight of stairs, I hit my head again, and I woke
the
up
same place, dude.
It's so bad.
It bounced out. He hit the other side.
I know what happened to you, Wacky Wednesday.
You know,
parent trap. What happens?
And I wish it gave me superpowers, but it didn't. I ended up in the hospital. I woke up in the hospital 2 days later, and I was down to 117 pounds.
Ooh,
because
Jim,
I really wasn't taking care of myself.
Yeah.
And I was hooked up to all these IVs. I was malnourished, and I thought there has to be a better way. It was the darkest, most depressing time in my life. And when I woke up, another part of me woke up saying there has to be a better way. And that nurse came in exact moment and brought in a mug of tea. And on it was a picture of Albert Einstein. And it had this quote that said, the same level of thinking that's created your problem won't solve your problem. And it made me say, well, what's my problem? I'm a very slow learner. Well, how do I think differently about it? Well, maybe I could learn how to learn. So I set my studies aside and I just start studying adult learning theory and how to study and speed reading and ancient mnemonics. I wanted to know, what did the ancient Greeks do before there was a printing press to be able to memorize things? And about 60 days of studying this material, a light switch flipped on and I started to understand things for the first time.
And your heart was attached to it, because your heart wasn't attached to fulfilling this book a week for your friend's dad.
Right.
Nor was it to get through the school that you didn't even know why you were sitting in. But your heart was attached to, why am I learning? Why am I such a slow learner? And how do I overcome this? So that fervor made you get through all those things to get you to where you are.
My life just opened up all of a sudden when
I
learned all
these things. At what age would you say it opened up for you?
So at 18, when I first learned these skills, and I got really actually upset that these weren't taught to me earlier on. So I started to tutor others. And one of my very first students, she was a freshman in college. She read 30 books in 30 days after I tutored her. And I wanted to find out not how, I wanted to know why, going back to the second age. And I found out her mother was dying of terminal cancer. And the books she was reading were books to save her mom's life, because doctors only gave her 2 months to live. And I wished her luck, prayers. 6 months later, I get a call from this young lady, and she's crying, and she's crying and crying. And I find out they're tears of joy that her mother not only survived, but is really getting better. Doctors don't know how or why. They called it a miracle, but her mother attributed 100% to the great advice she got from her daughter, who learned it from all these books. And in that moment, I realized that if knowledge is power, then learning is our superpower, and it's a superpower we all have.
And this is why you're my superhero friend, Jim. Oh, we have to take a break right now, but we're coming back with so many hard-hitting questions. So, Jim, get your memory ready. Guys, we'll be right back. Guys, thank you so much. We're back with my friend, Jim Quick, brain coach, memory expert, and phenomenal human being. Jim, the reason why I wanted you to come to my podcast is I'm in a place in my life where I'm starting to feel like I'm being born this 40th year of my life. And it is because everything I know about myself, from my sexual abuse at 9 to being rejected by my mom when she didn't know how to help me when I confronted the situation with her, to all of the people-pleasing mistakes I made, up into a failed marriage, which I'm quoting that label because that's what it seemed like, I realized that I never properly healed my trauma. And I never properly revisited and readjusted what I learned so that I could evolve today and heal myself today and forgive myself today. So I'm going through that now. This whole thing has to do with my memory. Everything I remember and everything I'm trying to correct when it comes to memory. So you being a memory expert, I want to ask you, what does our memory have to do with trauma? And can you forget the way that it made you feel, or can you fix the way that it made you feel? How do you redirect that? How do you heal your trauma with your memory once you've acknowledged it?
Yeah, let's unpack that. Okay. And certainly, I would recommend people, obviously, that have gone through a lot of trauma to be able to seek professional help.
Absolutely.
Or qualified therapist. From a memory standpoint, it's interesting that we could have post-traumatic stress as you and I and many people have had. But people don't realize there's something also called post-traumatic growth. And it doesn't get as much of a spotlight, but post-traumatic growth is when we go through adversity. I'm sure a lot of people could relate to going through immense challenge that you wouldn't wish upon anybody, but coming up out of it, realizing that you wouldn't change a lot of it because you found a purpose, you found a strength, you found a mission. Like, that mother that lost their child to drunk driving and created, mad, right? And so, like, they found something that's so valuable through that.
Because you grow an empathy towards what those people went through. And you really can't be that passionate about something unless you really understood and feel what that pain was like.
You can't learn that from a book.
True.
Without a doubt. It's like, for me, my passion is learning, and So I define passion as what lights you up, and purpose is what lights other people up. So my passion is learning, but my purpose is teaching other people how to learn. But my what I do for a living, it's not on for ambition. It's more a moral responsibility to help other people who are struggling the way I struggled. And, shame on me if somebody's suffering and I don't do what I can to be able to help them. So that's why I create the podcast and the videos and everything to help people overcome overload and distraction and memory loss and all those different things. But difficult times, they could define us, they could diminish us, or they could develop us. Ultimately, we decide, right? Happiness really is the C in between the B and the D. Happiness is the letter C between the letters B and D.
Break that down.
Where B is birth and D is death and C is choice. You get those goosebumps. I see them. I see them.
I wish we were on video right now. You guys would be dying. I'm like matrixing in my seat. Like, yo, wait.
I would say, I call them truth bumps, because it's one of those things where ultimately the people who come out of the difficult times, they decide to. They made a conscious choice.
Is it ever too late?
I would say it's never too late.
Never too late.
And we know this, right? That the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, but the second best time to plant a tree is today. Okay. Is in the now. Absolutely, the time that we could control. And so I feel like we have to take agency over our own happiness, and that it's not anyone else's responsibility. And then the people that really thrive on the other side are the ones that could identify more with a thermostat than a thermometer. Where a thermometer, you think about, what is the function of a thermometer? What does it do?
Gives you the temperature, lets you know how hot or how cold something
exactly.
is.
Exactly. It literally just reacts to the environment.
Yep.
And sometimes we are thermometers. We react to the economy. We react to how somebody is treating us on social media. We react to the weather. But ultimately, the happiest people are the ones that are thermostats, because a thermometer reacts to the environment, but a thermostat sets the environment. Right? It sets a temperature, and then the environment raises to be able to meet that temperature. But we are also thermostats. We set a goal, or we set a vision or an intention, and we need to impose that on the environment, as opposed to the environment, you know, where we're reacting to it.
Right.
And so I think the first place to start for healing is to own it. And when I say when
the That's goal, a big word.
It is. And I know you talk about this a lot.
Yes,
and so
how would you break it down?
I would break it down like we all make mistakes. And so our life is, you know, these collection of mistakes. And I think the goal is to make that mistake old. All right. And this includes your memories. Mm-hmm. You make them old, meaning older is in the past and it stays in the past. But old is an acronym. O is you own that mistake, right? Mm-hmm. We made a mistake, we own it. So how do we own a mistake? We take responsibility.
Responsible.
We are accountable to it. If we hurt somebody, we apologize. If we could fix it, we do our best to be able to fix it. We do not blame, right? This is what leaders do, right? They own the mistake. They don't blame other people. So we own that mistake. And then the L in old stands for you have to learn from that mistake, right? There is no such thing as failure, only failure to learn. There's only feedback. And feedback is the breakfast of superheroes, right? And that's why we make mistakes. But the challenge is a lot of people are scared of making mistakes because they feel like it defines who they are.
Right.
Right. But it's how we deal with those mistakes that really define us. But we need to learn from those mistakes. And then finally, the D in old. Once you own it and you learn from it, the D is don't repeat it. Right. Don't repeat it. So many people make a mistake of dating a certain kind of person. And then they repeat it over and over again. You must have girlfriends or guy friends
that date the same wrong guy and complain about him.
Because they didn't either learn from it or they're repeating it, right? And that's a big challenge. And there's this quote about insanity. Insanity is doing the
same thing and expecting different results.
And I don't think that's insanity. I think it's just a bad memory.
Mm.
So insanity, people think insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. But I'm just saying that's a bad memory, because if you remembered what happened, you wouldn't do that same thing in your relationship or in your business or anything else like that.
Absolutely.
So I would recommend that would be a great place to start. You own it, you learn from it, and then you don't repeat it. But going back to memories, you know, it works both ways. The trauma becomes a memory, and then those memories also stimulate that trauma over and over again. And the good news is, you know, going back to agency and responsibility, is we have influence on our thoughts, the way we picture things, right? And how we picture things and how we feel certain things. But we don't feel like we do because we feel like we're at the effect of these same thoughts going over and over again. The average person has about 60,000 thoughts a day. The problem, though, is 95% of those thoughts are the same thoughts they had yesterday.
Why is that?
And the day before that.
Like, give me an example of a thought that repeats itself.
Here's an example. You know, somebody asked me the other day, is like, well, what's your definition of thinking? You know, you wanted somebody to think better. What does that mean? Thinking is like the process of asking and answering questions. So if somebody is asking themselves, is that true? Notice to think about it, you had to ask a question. But here's the thing. We have certain questions we ask more than anything else. And it's a dominant question. And a lot of people who are listening to this, this is going to be their big takeaway. So for example, there are certain questions you ask more than any other question, hundreds of times.
Would it be like for women, I think it's, am I pretty or am I good enough? I think for women, is that an example of
so
the question?
So I took a friend of mine, I took her through this process and we found out her dominant question that she asks hundreds of times a day, probably thousands of times unconsciously, is how do I get people to like me?
Right.
How do I get people to like me? And now notice, you don't know her age, you don't know her background, you don't know her career, you don't know where she lives, you don't know what she looks like, her ethnicity, you know, her health, you don't know anything, but you know a lot about her. I mean, she's very insecure.
Okay. Yeah,
right?
Totally insecure.
So she's very insecure because she's asking, how do I get people like me? She's a people pleaser, right? Because she's always trying to appease and she's like a sycophant.
Absolutely.
People. She also martyrs herself a lot. Because she's always doing for other people to get them to like her. And so you don't know anything about her, but you know a lot about her because you just know one question.
Right.
And we all have that one question that we ask ourselves all the time. And so for example, going back to Hollywood, I was working with Will Smith.
Okay.
And we were on set and he was filming we were filming in the winter in Toronto. It was very cold from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. And it's not a very glamorous life. It's just waiting and waiting.
Sit around and
waiting.
Wait.
And but his family was there from West Philly, as we all know from the song. And but he's like, so his question is, how do I make this moment even more magical? That's his dominant question he asks all the time.
As an actor.
Because he asks that, he gets a lot of answers. And so you could see that in his behavior because he's bringing his family hot chocolate. He's cracking jokes because these are all things he would do because he's asking this question, right? Right. So my question is, you know, growing up as the boy with the broken brain, I was always watching people succeed where I wasn't. And I was thinking, how do I make this better? Like my dominant question I ask all the time is, how do I make this better? How do I fix this?
Back then and today?
Even today.
Okay.
So I learned it early on
okay.
because life conditions will spark it.
Yep.
But even today, I'm always asking, how do I make this better?
Sure.
How do I make this better? And then because I do, that part of your brain, they call it the reticular activating system. And this is, so the brain primarily is a deletion device. The brain is trying to actually keep information out because at any given time, there's a billion stimulus you could be paying attention to. And what do you decide to pay attention to is what the things you have questions for. So that RAS, the reticular activating system, is fulfilled by the questions that we ask. And so, for example, my sister years ago would send me emails and photographs of these pug dogs, right? And I don't know why. And literally I'm asking, why is she sending me these pug dogs? And I realized that her birthday was coming up, right?
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so she's
nice
planting
move,
seeds.
Sis.
Yeah. She was planting seeds, but a funny thing happened. All over, I started seeing pug dogs everywhere. I would go to the grocery store, I'd be checking out, and somebody's checking out with a pug dog.
Right. Or like when you're shopping for a new car and you're thinking about that car, you see it everywhere.
Exactly. I was running around my neighborhood and I saw somebody walking six pug dogs. And my question for everybody listening is, where were these pug dogs before? Did they just magically appear?
No,
they were always there, but I wasn't paying attention to them because they weren't important to me. They were part of the billion stimuli I was keeping out. But then I started asking questions like, why is she sending me pug dog pictures? And I started paying attention to pug dogs. And my reticular activating system was like, there's a pug dog, there's a pug dog, there's a pug dog. So going back to, let's say, reading, remember what you read? A lot of people will read something and not remember what they just read because they don't have questions, right? If they had questions, they would be like, there's an answer, there's an answer, there's the answer. Well, these questions determine what gets in our filter, you know, because you can only pay attention to 5 to 9 bits of information. That's what science says, Harvard says.
Okay.
And so what the 5 to 9 bits of information are the things you have questions for. So some people are asking disempowering questions that are focusing them on the things that, like, why can't I ever be enough? You ask that question, you're going to come up with evidence why you're not enough.
How do you stop that?
Wait, Dennis, I got to just absorb this for a second. My brain is exploding. You just taught me, because I'm an Instagram girl, I'm obsessed with it, I love it. I don't abuse it, but I actually had to train my Instagram to get to an algorithm that showed me shit I wanted. So in the beginning, friend, when I started Instagram, I love looking at girls with great bodies. I love fitness, sexy things. I loved gossip. I love stuff that wasn't healthy for my mind. So then when I started craving a great quote or an empowering person, I had to dig like crazy, or I had to literally go to someone else's feed and then go on their feed or their likes in order to find that.
Wow.
Then I learned about algorithm. I learned that Instagram is controlling what we search. If you spend a couple seconds on a picture, you're gonna, if you click on a butt picture and just to look at it, it knew you like butt pictures.
Right.
So you're gonna get more butt pictures. Those pugs are gonna show up.
Right.
So I had made my algorithm full of things that I did not want, but my brain was just, without thinking, without paying attention to, going for. And it was really just messing up my mind and dirtying my mind. So I literally unfollowed people that had trashy follows or trashy content. I stopped clicking on the gossip. Every time I saw it, I was like, keep my finger away. And my algorithm started to change. So now all I get is inundated with lots of your stuff from Jim Quick's feed, because it's always empowering. Great quotes, meaningful, cute Ellen type videos of kids. And I love it and I'm happy. So you're fucking telling me right now that our brain has an algorithm that we control. And the more we ask questions that are either positive or negative, we are going to see and make up answers for that because we want those answers and it can be found.
You just gave me goosebumps right back. So that's amazing.
The depth of what you got from me was relating it to Instagram.
I think you just blew everyone's mind who's listening, because the algorithm is the reticular activating system and the questions are the clicks. So I think we just solved everything.
Shit.
So we could so that and that then that's how powerful, and then we have agencies, and that's a thing. We're always running that algorithm in terms of what shows up in our feed, because at any given moment there's positive and negative things we could focus on.
Breaking that down to your RAS, I just want to know some fundamental steps on how to clean up our algorithm so that we can start filtering the posts that we want to see in our brain.
I love this. And in reality, just externally and internally.
Absolutely.
Because it'll focus what we pay attention to out here and then also inside. And I love this. So let's dig into this. So questions are one of the tools we have, just like any kind of click or video that we watch to show our algorithm what's most important to us. And so the first thing I would do is clean up the questions that we're going to ask. So like before, I was saying like a negative disempowering question would be something like,
how do I make them like me?
Exactly. Or you know, am I enough? Or why am I not enough? Or why can I never lose weight?
Yes. Or do I look fat in this?
Exactly. Because if you ask something like, why can I ever lose weight? You're going to come up with evidence. Oh, because of this reason, and this reason, as opposed to asking a question like, how do I have energy and enjoy the process? Then you'd be like, oh, these are all different. You come up with different different things show up in your feed, and then you start reinforcing that and you start getting answers all the time. So at any given time, there's good things you could pay attention to or negative things. And that's why we know that optimists achieve more. Research has shown that people who are more optimistic actually get more done and achieve more because they're focusing on the things that are really possible. So I would control the questions. Another thing that I would do is really, we're talking about software, is really make sure your hardware is set.
Would be your hardware?
So if a software program is how to read faster, how to remember names, how to, the things that we teach in our
podcast. Like an application?
Kind of thing. Exactly.
Okay.
And so the hardware is like the brain itself. You want to make sure your brain is fit and healthy, because if you're lacking in certain areas, like sleep, like certain nutrients, right? If you have too much stress, that's gonna hurt your, like chronic stress shrinks your brain. So that's not good for your hardware.
Mm.
So there's like a good brain diet, right?
Yeah.
Certain foods that are just very nourishing for you, because what you eat matters, especially for your gray matter. Part of what affects your hardware is sleep. And I know sleep, you know,
People do not take sleep seriously enough.
If you look at all of a lot of the challenges people have around mental health, a common pattern is poor sleep, hygiene, and that's so important. Another part of what affects your hardware, people don't realize this, are the people we spend time with. You know, like when you're around people, you know, the positive peer group, people that are encouraging you, that are supporting you, that are educating you, that are challenging you, that are cheerleading for you, your brain loves that and it thrives. But when we're around energy vampires or people that
are negative, consistently critical.
And sometimes it could be people that are closest to us, you know, like sometimes it could be family members or friends, and they could have good intentions. Maybe they don't want you to be hurt. They don't want you to get your hopes up with, you know, in that relationship or in that career goal or whatever we have. They could be sincere, but they could be sincerely wrong also as well. So we need to be able to audit that, because it's not just our neurological networks, it's our social networks, because who we spend time with is who we become. They say that if you spend time with 9 broke people, be careful, because you're going to be number 10, right? And the reason why, from a brain perspective, is you have these thing called mirror neurons. And these mirror neurons, like a mirror that you look at, they imitate and they allow you to feel empathy, right? When you're watching sports or an action show, you could feel what they're feeling.
Yep.
And what happens is your mirror neurons are constantly adapting and adopting the behaviors and the talk of the people around you. And so that's why your life show up the same way.
Wow.
You know, and so yeah, we have to be very careful, because we are the average of the 5 people we spend the most time with.
It's just, guys, so we want to be able that silence is literally me depositing his information and actually comparing my own habits to everything that you're saying, because I do notice that once you start making those tiny adjustments, even the, so to speak, algorithm of our mind, all of a sudden things start to change. You start to lose interest to hanging out with certain people that you notice make you feel a certain way that you've trained your brain to go against. So if you want to hear more positive things, if you want to criticize yourself less or even hear less gossip, suddenly when those people call you to hang out or you're at a dinner and it's, you know, going into that 11th hour where you actually feel really good about being in bed and you're starting to picture your pajamas, you start to gravitate towards going towards that happy place and eliminating those things that make you feel weighted or depressed or even remind you what you used to be like.
Yeah, when you clean up, it's similar when you're doing like a fast or you're doing like you're eating really clean. You don't have that urge to eat that junk food.
Absolutely.
As much.
So absolutely.
As much.
it's about controlling your environment externally and then also controlling your internal environment, because what you nourish flourishes, right?
Absolutely. How long do you think it would take for a person to reset their RAS to a healthy place?
Yeah, I mean, I would be thinking that it's a certain amount of time. I mean, for different people, just like changing a habit. What's important about what we're talking about habits is I believe that first you create your habit and then your habit creates you, right? You create your habits of meditation or journaling or working out or eating the best food or doing the things that bring you joy. And then those habits create you back. I really do believe that the treasure we seek, it's hidden in our daily routine, you know, the things that we're doing. But the thing is we're unconscious. Just like when I'm talking about the 60,000 thoughts a day that we're not really conscious of, we our habits are unconscious too. Stanford University says about 40% of our daily routine is just spent just scripts, like unconsciously. We're just doing things that we've been doing for years and years.
Why do we do that?
Because it's easy. Because it takes energy to be able to think hard. It takes energy to be able to do something different with our body.
For sure.
Even if you're doing like a new workout, it takes, you know, the body, the brain wants to keep things pretty static and not want to grow. But here's the thing, like while the beauty is in the butterfly, you know, the growth happens in the cocoon. Mm-hmm. Right, it's that caterpillar's want and desire to be able to get out of that, to be able to build its wings, it grows strength so that it could be able to fly. But so many people don't want that struggle. But with struggle comes strength.
When it comes to you on a daily basis, what are things you cannot live without?
Like my non-negotiables.
Yep. Yeah, to keep your brain healthy.
So you have to, in order to win the day, you have to win the first hour of the day, right?
Okay.
Because that's momentum. And so there's certain things I do every single morning to jumpstart my brain. Like Oprah has her morning routine, and I'm sure Tony Robbins has his, and everyone has theirs. Mine, the first thing I do when I wake up is I remember my dreams. The reason why you want to remember your dreams is because when you're learning all day, or you're at work all day, or it's studying all day, your brain doesn't shut off at night. If anything, it's more active, and it's coming up with solutions. Like, did you know, like, huge works of art and inventions and literature and music came from dream states?
No.
So
the periodic table, I've heard that one.
Yeah, the periodic table, a chemist came up with the framework for the periodic table in his dream.
What?
Yeah, Mary Shelley came up with Frankenstein in her dream. Like, Elias Howe, the inventor, came up with the sewing machine in his dream. Paul McCartney came up with the song Yesterday in his dream. I mean, you do so many amazing things in your dream, because we'll probably spend about 20 years of our lifetime sleeping, about 3 to 5 years dreaming, 3 to 5 straight years dreaming.
Of just gold that we're letting slip through our fingers because if we don't take the moment to remember them.
Right. And so one of the popular episodes we did was how to remember your dreams, six steps, right? So that's the first thing that I do.
Okay.
The second thing I do is I make my bed. And you're thinking like, what does that have to do with your brain, right?
Right.
Here's the thing. Your brain loves a clean environment.
It's
because
so true.
Your external world is a reflection of your internal world. And how you do anything is how you do everything. How you do anything in life is how you do everything
in
life.
So when you take the time to reset something that you're going to look forward to later on, and you actually walk in and out of your bedroom to see something that you took the time to organize and make aesthetically pretty and pleasing to your eye, everything you do should have that same effect.
Exactly. How you do anything is how you do everything. And so we're taking something ordinary like making a bed and you're making it extraordinary because you make it with excellence. And how long does it take? 1 or 2 minutes, right? But that's why they do that in the military. In the military, it's everything is centimeters and specific angles, because if you could do that with precision, you could do everything else that day with that level of focus and precision, right? And just as you said, when you come back later at the end of the day, how great does it feel coming back to a made bed?
Absolutely.
You come back full circle to success, right? And then after that, I hydrate, because we can lose, people don't realize this, just a dip in your hydration, like if you are dehydrated, will hurt your reaction time and thinking speed 30%. So, and we lose about 1 pound of water every night when we sleep through respiration, through perspiration. So you need to be able to hydrate. So I have a glass of water. I take my probiotics, because your gut is your second brain. So you want to be able to nourish that as well. Another thing I do that everyone could do right now is brush your teeth. But here's the thing, everyone brushes your teeth, but I challenge you right now to brush your teeth with the opposite hand. All right. And this is what study shows. They did this study, Dr. Lawrence Katz.
We're trying to.
Yeah. Dr.
Why?
Lawrence.
I already want to do it, but why? Right. I want to know why I'm doing
it. So Dr. Lawrence Katz was working with these seniors and wanted to find out how to keep their brains alive as they age. And they found little things like eating with the opposite hand or brushing your teeth with the opposite hand actually stimulated different parts of the brain. And the other reason why you want to brush your teeth with the opposite hand, it forces you to be in the now. It's an exercise of focus for you to be present.
Nobody wants a bunch of canker sores.
Exactly. And so people are more, what they're doing in the morning more is they're touching their phone, right? And whatever you're doing regularly is what you're getting better at. And the worst thing, and I have a video, it has 37 million views on Facebook, and it basically says, don't touch your phone the first hour of the day. Yeah, like literally, and I know this is gonna, people are listening, like I love this guy up till now. I did not need to hear this, but as a coach, you know, a coach pushes you and wants you to be at your best. The reason why, when you wake up in the morning, you're in a pretty relaxed state, right? You're in this relaxed state and you're very suggestible. So if the first thing you do is pick up your phone, you're rewiring your brain for two things that are hurting you. Number one, for distraction. Because every like, share, comment, cat video creates a dopamine flick, you know, flood, and that goes along your motivation, learning receptors of your brain. It makes it addictive, but it's really training you to be distracted throughout your day.
You're right.
The second reason why you don't want to touch your phone the first hour of the day, it's not only rewiring your brain to be distracted, it's rewiring your brain to be reactive. It's rewiring your brain to be a thermometer. It's rewiring your brain, because you know this. If you get one bad text message, one voicemail, one social media message.
Or you check those likes and they weren't as high as you wanted them to be when you posted the night before.
And you're in this very impressionable, suggestible state. All of a sudden, it just hijacks your brain. Because you could get one message. I have a friend named Brendan. He wrote a motivation manifesto. And he says, your inbox is nothing but a convenient organizational system for other people's agenda for your life. You know, all of a sudden you're fighting fires and you're on the defense. And how are you going to build an astonishing day or life if you're just defensive?
You're going from thermostat to thermometer the moment you check your phone, because you are reacting from the news you get.
Exactly.
So in order to really keep yourself in that present state of mind and brushing your teeth with the left hand, you can actually preserve that and start to feel what that's like, so you can elongate it too in your day.
Exactly. So how you do anything is how you do everything. When you're brushing your teeth with the opposite hand, all of a sudden you have to be present, because you can't be thinking about other things and do that job right. And so you're training your focus and your concentration. Another thing I do first thing in the morning is I just for 3 minutes, I work out. And that's not my workout for the day, But studies show, they did a study at Appalachian State University saying in order to lose weight and get better sleep, when's the best time to work out? 7 a.m., 1 p.m., or 7 p.m.?
Wait.
7 a.m., 1 p.m., or 7 p.m., what's the best time? They said 7 a.m.
Why?
And so part of it is jumping, starting your metabolism blood and everything flow. Else like that. So, but 3 minutes. So you could just do some burpees, some calisthenics, you know, animal flow, whatever you're doing. But for 3 minutes, you do that. Because what's good for your heart is good for your head. So you get that blood flow and oxygen. Next, I'll jump in the shower. And here's the thing. And again, people aren't going to like this. Cold showers. Cold showers.
Jim, get out of here. Yeah.
But here, at the very least,
I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
At the very least, you could go back and forth from hot to cold, but this is what it does. Yeah, the cold plunge. So I do that pretty often. This is why you do it. Cold therapy. It's like you hit your knee on the coffee table. Okay. What do? You put your
hand on it.
Right. And you put ice, especially because it reduces the swelling and yes. It reduces inflammation. Well, we have a lot of inflammation in our body and in our brain, which is part of our body. And one of the ways to reduce inflammation is through cold therapy. So a cold shower is like a nervous system reset. For me, it's even better than coffee. I'm not saying replace your coffee, but it's
how
like,
cold are you going? Like all the way nozzle cold?
I'm going all the way cold for 10 seconds and then I'm going back warm.
And you stand and you're cringing,
go,
right? You're
right, not of course. Okay. Nobody loves that feeling. Okay. But when you go from that back to warm or hot, it creates this pumping action in your blood vessels and it's very nourishing. And so cold therapy. Oh, you go to a Korean spa, they have a cold plunge and they go back and forth, back and forth. Exactly. And so like the ancients, this is all the wisdom of you know, our elders.
Centuries ago, yeah.
And so take that cold shower, but then you go cold, hot, but it's amazing for your nervous system and also your brain. So I do all of these things. I make a brain power smoothie and here's the thing. It's not even about time management for me. It's about priority management. Mm. You know, it's about the most important, here's the thing, and let this sink. The most important thing is to keep the most important thing, the most important thing. The most important thing is to keep the most important thing, the most important thing. Because so many people get really good at things that just don't matter. You know what I mean? And you don't want to climb up the ladder of success only to find out when you get to the top that it's leaning on the wrong wall. You want to get good at the things that are most important to you. And so many people get really good because whatever you're doing on a regular basis is what you're getting good at, right? And so these are the things that you want to be focused on. So what I do is think about priority. I'm thinking about the three things that would make it a win for me. Like I do this mind experiment, this thought experiment. I say, I fast forward to the end of the day and I'm coming home and somebody asked me how my day was. And I was like, I crushed it. This was an amazing day.
Right.
And then I asked myself, what had to happen in order for me to feel that way? Right. And my friend Clay calls it a champagne moment. Like in sports, you know when you're going to crack open that champagne because yep. It's very clear what happens. Well, do we have that for our day? And so for me, I write down three things personally that I want to do or achieve and three things professionally in my work. And then I don't touch my phone until I get one of those things done. And it doesn't have to be big things. They could be simple things.
Give me a simple thing.
Right? Simple things like, oh, I'm
getting a jog around the block.
Exactly. Doing
okay.
Something nurturing
Calling
for
your
yourself.
Mom.
Exactly. Right. But then at the end of the day, you're thinking like, if I do these things done, not the 200 things I might, because nobody gets 200 things done
right.
On their to-do list, but they prioritize and they say, if I get these three things done in my work, then it was a great day. Then I could really celebrate.
Okay, this is just from my personal knowledge. Yeah, yeah. I just want to know before I wrap, what's your guilty pleasure?
I wanted to ask that too.
Shut up, it's my question.
I wanted to ask, what guilty pleasure that you know is fucking up your brain?
It's not good for you, and yes. You do. What do you do when you just gotta like yeah. Turn everything off, Jim,
Netflix
quick?
Or something like.
Yeah, I mean, certainly.
Binge.
Yeah.
What is it?
Yeah, yeah. I certainly binge watch. I mean, and I have no problem with people, like, so I binge watch, I read comic books, I do all, you know, things that are, people would say is less than, you know, in certain areas, but that's my time. You know what I mean? I don't mind doing things that maybe aren't changing the world or improving
sure.
My health.
But what would they be? I need to picture it. I need a visual before
yeah,
I sign off.
Yeah, what are you?
What
yeah,
is it?
I mean, I just
smoke a cigarette.
This yeah, is what not, are you doing? Are you rolling
smoking?
A joint? What
no,
are you
no, no,
doing?
No, this is not an endorsement. But I just like, you know, Disney Plus just came online, and
oh
I just like,
God,
just,
oh,
I,
God.
That's my
wow.
That's my thing.
Okay, and if you could meet anybody in the world, dead or alive, and yeah. Have dinner with them, who would it be for you, Jim?
Oh, it would be my grandparents for sure.
Oh,
yeah.
Jim Kwik, everybody. I have to tell you, this was one of the most exhilarating podcasts I've not only led, but I've ever listened to. I'm a huge fan of my own podcast. You are such a dynamic, special human being. Guys, please follow Jim Kwik on Instagram at Jim Kwik, and his name really is Kwik. It's his real government name.
K-W-I-K. Yes, my father's name, my grandfather's. I didn't change it to do this. I had to be a runner in school, which is a lot of pressure when it says Kwik right on your shirt. I have to be very careful when I'm driving because you cannot talk your way out of a speeding ticket
when your
driver's license says Kwik right on it. And I get to do my dharma, my mission, which is teaching people how to learn anything faster. And yeah. Thank you so much.
Yes, absolutely. Jim is such a gift to us. Do check out his Facebook video that has 37 million views.
Podcast.
Google him, and his podcast is magical.
Can I challenge everybody?
Yes. Oh my God, I love challenges. I'm already going to brush my teeth with my left hand, but what else do we do?
I'm going to challenge everybody to do this. I'm going to challenge everyone to take a screenshot of this podcast.
Okay.
Take a screenshot of it and tag Jeannie, tag myself.
Yep.
And I want everybody to share their big aha. What is one thing you're going to do because of this conversation? It could be so little. It could be brushing your teeth with the opposite hand. It could be making your bed first thing in the morning. Yeah. It could be remembering your dreams. It could be remembering to fall in love with that person in the mirror that's been through so much but is still standing. It could be any of those things because I believe that ultimately the best way to learn something is to teach it to somebody else. When we teach something, we get to learn it twice.
Yes.
So take a screenshot. Tag us both in it because when I see it, I will reshare some of my favorite and repost some of my favorites and share your big aha so somebody else's life will be better because of it.
So do share that screenshot with me and Jim on our DMs. Just slip into our DMs with this and we love to celebrate it and keep the seeds moving and growing. Thank you, Jim. We love you.
Oh, thank you both.
Bye, everybody. Don't forget to subscribe and follow Jim Kwik's podcast and my own. And we love you. See you guys next week.